This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. And today we are talking about an amazing book. I've just been so eager to talk to this author because this book is very special. Patrick Girondi has written a book called Flight of the Rondone. Hi, Patrick. Is it pronounced Rondone or Rondone?
Rondone.
Rondone. That's what I thought. Okay. Well, Patrick Girondi, I'm pronouncing that right too?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Patrick, wow, this book is incredible. Wow, you are a brilliant writer.
Well, thank you for that.
Well, it's quite amazing. I want to tell people that we're going to talk about the fact that you didn't graduate from high school, but today you are the CEO of a major company that handles gene therapy, and we're going to talk about how we got there. But I wanted to mention particularly when I was reading the book, I stopped at chapter 15, and you're writing about... you've left the hospital and you're speeding away in your Fiat Duna, and you're driving along the Adriatic. And I thought this chapter is so well written. Any author in the world would be thrilled if they could write that well.
That's very very kind of you, obviously, to say that. Writing for me, when my son was diagnosed with thalassemia, which is a rare blood disease, a fatal blood disease, when he was diagnosed, they said he wouldn't make it to be 14 years old, would have to transfuse constantly and live a very horrible life. And the only chance that he had was a bone marrow transplant. And when there was no donors in the bank and no one in our family that was compatible, writing really... I mean, in a lot of ways, writing and really saved me, actually. I mean, it just was incredible that I could, put my thoughts to paper. And even not only my thoughts, but just things that could entertain my mind. And it really, really was a godsend for me, writing.
Well, it's beautiful writing, wonderful book in so many ways. We'll take a step back, and I mentioned that you didn't graduate from high school, but you had many accomplishments in your life, and we'll talk about that because it led you to this place where your son becomes ill. But let's step back. When did you become a songwriter?
Yeah, so, I mean, I grew up in the south side of Chicago, blue-collar neighborhood called Bridgeport by White Sox Park. Predominantly Italian. I grew up with predominantly Italians. And my grandfather came to the United States in the 60s or the 50s, and he dreamt of singing lyric opera in the United States. That's what he did in Italy. He really never got too far with it, but I always had his love of music. And when I was a kid in school, I would sing the first Noel for the class, and I wrote my first song I can remember called Drumbeat for my mother. I was about 8 or 9 years old. And then I was in a couple of garage bands as a kid. Then I ended up, going into the military and getting out of the military, going to work, and getting lucky enough to fall onto the Chicago Board of Trade, the Chicago Board Option Exchange. And, I was on Oprah Winfrey Show as a guest twice, and American Most Eligible Bachelors with Sylvester Stallone and Magic Johnson. And then I got married, and my first son was diagnosed with thalassemia in 1990. I let the music go, and I just dedicated myself to finding a cure and to writing. We started our first company in 1993, In 1995, I was joined by John Walton, the son of Sam Walton of Walmart. He was my partner for 9 years. He stuck about $20 million into the company. And we developed, therapies, cancer and non-cancer. In 2004, he handed the company over to me completely. He had a sickness in his family, which is the reason that he joined me, and they no longer had that worry, so he handed the company over to me. And unfortunately, John died in 2005. But we took over the gene therapy from Michel Sadelain, a brilliant French doctor who works at Memorial Sloan Kettering, in 2005. And the music started again. My first published CD was Orphan Soul in 2004, and it was how I found out who I was through the orphan diseases, of which thalassemia and sickle cell disease are both orphan diseases. I put sickle cell disease with thalassemia because they're both genetic defects on the beta globin gene, and if you cure one of them, you basically cure both diseases. So I was very dedicated to, and me and all of my friends, I mean, they put in hundreds of thousands of dollars and millions of dollars in the end. I was dedicated to research, but then I stepped back and I entered the music again. And the first CD was Orphan Soul, How I Found My Soul Through the Orphan Diseases. The second one was Orphan's Journey, explaining a little bit what it was to navigate the waters of research and the hospitals. And then the third was in 2010, Orphan's Hope, when we actually thought that we had it taken care of, then Orphan's Cure in 2014, and then Orphan's Return, which it talks, there's songs in it like I'm the Doctor, Judge O, and it's all about, it's a lot of songs that have to do with the court case, because we eventually ended up in a huge court case, which was a front page in the New York Times in 2016. I could go on and on, but I'll...
Let's start with the day here your first son is born, and how soon did you have any idea that you had a familial disease?
No idea. I mean, and what happens when we're in our mother's womb and up to a year and a half, we live on fetal hemoglobin, which is the gamma globin gene. And what happens around a year and a half, it transfers from the gamma globin gene, it shuts off, and the beta globin gene, which is the adult hemoglobin gene, turns on. And for our sickle cell patients and our thalassemic patients like my son, they have a defective beta globin gene. So it doesn't turn on properly. And the sickle cell patients, they have it actually added on top of that, is that their cells that they do produce sickle and clog their, capillaries and veins, etc., creating horrible crises.
So when your son was born, how soon after he was born did you discover?
He was right, 2.5 years old.
2.5 years old.
In October of 1992.
And so how did it manifest itself? I mean, you thought he was healthy, so young?
He was very healthy. Everything was fine. All of a sudden, he was lethargic. His face turned, his skin color turned to yellowish, sort of. And he was just very tired all the time. So we took him into the hospital and discovered that he had a hemoglobin of about 7.5. A normal hemoglobin for a male is anywhere between 11 and 16. A female could be, 10 and 14. But he had a hemoglobin of 7.5, and he was diagnosed with beta thalassemia.
So that was pretty shocking.
Out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere. So you right there, you start with the doctors that you already have, you're trying to find out what can be done. And what did they at first say to you about what his prospects were?
Yeah, well, he was supposed to only make it till he was about 14 years old and have to live a painful life with iron chelation and blood transfusions every 2 to 3 weeks. Instead, we didn't want to do that, obviously, because back in the early 90s, they still hadn't discovered the antibody for HIV and for hepatitis C. So, I mean, you were playing Russian roulette every time you got a blood transfusion. So I discovered a wonderful professor named Susan Perrine. She's now at the University of Boston. Back then, she was at Children's Hospital Oakland Research Institute. And she was working with a drug called arginine butyrate, which, if given to the patients, it stimulated the fetal hemoglobin to work again. And so for about 8 years, 7 years, my son actually was on this arginine butyrate, which was very safe. The problem was, though, he had to be hooked up to a pump about 12 to 16 hours a day, and it carried his hemoglobin back to about 10 so that he could live a somewhat normal life.
But that wasn't good enough for you. You decided to look further into it. How did you start your research? Since you didn't go to college, you didn't have a science or a math background, how did you decide to pick up the medical books and plow into them?
Yeah, I mean, when the doctors tell you that, you know, this is the way it is, your kid's going to die before he's 14, it doesn't leave you a lot of room. And so you ask yourself, okay, what am I going to do here? And the answer came back to me, well, I'm going to have to try to cure the disease. Now, obviously, I'm not a researcher, and I'm not a scientist, and I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, but what I started doing was accumulating knowledge about the disease. And back then, I had, you know, all of my friends sending me miles and miles of faxes so that I could stay up to date on every single Lancet, every single New England Journal and Science, whatever it was that came up with an article about the disease. And I just, you know, plowed ahead. From making arginine butyrate, we ended up in 2000 discovering Michel Sedelin, who had published in Nature magazine that he cured six generations of thalassemic mice with gene therapy using the disarmed HIV vector loaded with the beta globin gene. And I knew it. Once I read that article and I saw his data, I made an appointment to meet with him in Rome. I met with him. I looked in his eyes and I said, this is it. This is my guy. And in 2003, he told me that Sloan Kettering was abandoning the project because they're a cancer center, basically. And so I looked around to try to find a company to take over the research. But, you know, I talked to all the major players, but they're all like, well, you're a nice guy and you're a good father, but, you know, gene therapy is science fiction, you know, it ain't going to work. And so I didn't have a choice. So in 2005, I bought the product from Memorial Sloan Kettering. And between 2005 and 2010, Michel Sedelin, his wife, Isabel Rivera, who's a brilliant scientist as well, Christopher Ballas, one of our scientists, and Paolo Moy, Aurelio Maggio, a bunch of different doctors that we got together, John Tisdale of the NIH, they worked and we came up with the best product till then. We delivered in August and September of 2010 the first world's batch of gene therapy, because up until then it cost $1 million a person to make and you could only make it one person at a time. Instead, we made a batch of 10 for $1.3 million or $130,000 per patient.
Wow.
And I don't deserve any of the credit, Patsy. I mean, I believe me, I don't. I mean, I'm a father who just did what I needed to do to help my son. I was lucky that I lived the American dream. I had been successful at the exchanges, so I had some money. And had I been a truck driver, had I been a nurse, had I been, you know, a number of many other things, my life would have been very different. But I was lucky. I had the means to push it forward, push the research forward. But again, I'm no different, no better than anyone else. And I certainly have met over the years dozens and dozens of parents who are really incredible in comparison to me. But And so I was very lucky. We delivered that medicine. And in 2011, we returned the product to Memorial Sloan Kettering. And we decided that they would go forward with it. In 2015, I wasn't happy with the progress being made. And I went to court in New York, federal court, Judge Nathan. And I asked her, can you please force Memorial Sloan Kettering to return the project to me because it's slowing down. And we have a competitor who I believe has a worse product or a not a great product. And, you know, we're losing time. And she wouldn't force them to return it to us, but she said that I could file other charges. So we did. And in 2020, basically the project was returned to us. Unfortunately, we discovered, as you'll read in the book, I don't want to read the, ruin the book.
Yeah, I know. There's what comes through this book is really how often you have, I mean, you speak very honestly about dealing with doctors and dealing with drug companies and the problems, and sometimes their own personalities of these people get in the way of the work that needs to be done.
Yeah, and I mean, the problem in, you know, we grew up with, you know, Dr. Welby and stuff like that, and the problem, particularly with the United States, by the way, it's exasperated by, you know, our idea of capitalism or whatever. But, you know, when we were children, healthcare was a service, and doctors didn't make, you know, $100 million, and aspirins didn't cost $27 a piece in the emergency room. You know, it was actually a service. And it was, you know, we had back in the 80s, we had 34% of all of our employees in the United States were in unions. And so all of the people had insurance, and the other 66% that weren't in unions gave their people insurance anyway because they didn't want to have unions. And it was very affordable. It was kind of like it is in Europe today and in most parts of the world. But slowly but surely, health became an industry. And in the United States, it's probably the biggest industry of any of them. I mean, 20% of our national GDP goes to healthcare, and that's not even adding all of the trillions, probably at least hundreds of billions of dollars that people are spending every month on healthcare. I mean, I have friends that spend $4,000 a month for their insurance, and so it's turned into an industry. And just like any other industry, whether it's the, you know, Las Vegas, you know, the casinos in Las Vegas, or it's Ford or General Motors or IBM or Google, it's a company, and it's all about for profit. And a lot of the times, we have these not-for-profits, which is even worse, where you'll see, for example, Memorial Sloan Kettering is a not-for-profit, but the CEO, you know, makes between $6.5 and $7 million a year. And then when a child gets cancer, you know, they help them set up a GoFundMe page. I mean, it's all kind of become crazy, and I'm sure that, you know, it somewhere, somehow it's going to get fixed because it needs to be fixed.
Well, one of the things I think, if people read this book, it will open their eyes, because having been myself involved in, I actually was a hematologist tech, so I really understand this. But and I, when I was in the lab, I did discover, you know, find people with sickle cell anemia. I remember I used to do that. But what I think is important about this book, why it's, in addition to being just a great read, because you write in such a way that it's an exciting story and very revealing and very honest, but really people should open their eyes to these things. That, and I think maybe now that the pandemic, and we see that there's a lot of people taking a lot of profits, and we don't always know if they're doing the right thing. So I mean, you are to be admired and to be honored, because I think this book is fantastic. I don't know if you're going to write another book, but you are a born storyteller.
Oh, thank you very much. Heck, thank you so much. And there's actually another four books already written, and I'm trying to negotiate with the Skyhorse now about them. And I can tell you another thing, that the people that buy the book, they can rest assured that the money that they pay for the book, at least anything that would go to me, is going to be going to research. You know, in the United States, when I'm here, I have a 2009 Sebring, and in Italy, I have a 1996 Fiat Punto.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in the end, for me, my life is about the research. Anything that I write, any of my music, anything I do, it's all about San Rocco Therapeutics.
This is an amazing story, and I think that perhaps one of, you know, sometimes it was meant to be coming out at this time when people are aware of what happened during the pandemic and the confusion and the scientists not getting along and scientists not giving us straight answers. Having this opportunity to read your book will be very helpful, I think, to put things in perspective. And as you said, you put your money into the research, and that's where it's supposed to go. And when we donate money to these nonprofits, we have to be, I think, much firmer, and also when our government gives grants, much firmer about where the money's going and why.
Yes, you know what? That is right. And that is one of the biggest sins that I've noticed and that I've uncovered. And then, first of all, St. Jude, by the way, I love it. I love them, Scott Elmer, the whole crew over there. Wonderful people. No Kid Pays a Nickel, and they're a very, very, just an incredible organization. And I just wanted to bring that out, that there are some great organizations out there. But you're 100% right, because what the taxpayers don't realize is that 90%, 80% of all the research in the United States is paid for by the taxpayers. And the small organizations, for example, the Sickle Cell Anemia Foundation of Kentucky or of Florida or of what. These are the people that are putting the dollars into the research. And then the research institutes are taking them, giving them, because of the executives all being in cahoots together, so the executives of these research centers, whether they be for-profit or not-for-profit, are then making deals with the executives of Merck and Pfizer and all of the other ones, and they're selling for pennies on the dollar all of the research, all of these inventions, and then they make the patient, who is also the taxpayer, pay out of the nose when he needs these. I mean, it's just a ripoff.
It is. You have really written about it. I think that it's come at the right time. People need to wake up. It's sort of like what happened with the colleges. Nobody paid attention. The presidents of the colleges, the presidents of state universities, they make millions and millions and millions of dollars. And yet...
Right, and they haven't given the professors and the teachers a pay raise in 30 years.
Well, it depends. If the tenured professors sometimes get so much money, for teaching one class a week. It's ridiculous, and we're paying for it. What?
Yeah, it's crazy.
It is crazy.
But now they rarely give tenures out any longer.
Good.
I mean, it's so hard today. And so you're exactly right. All of that money has gone up to the executives who are running these Harvard and Yale and wherever it is. And, you know, we've watched the average tuition in the United States, I think it's $36,000 now. It's crazy.
It is. This is sort of a wake-up call. This book is wonderful. It's called Flight of the Rodone. Rondone, I'm sorry. Flight of the Rondone. Explain what that is. Okay.
Yes. When my son was diagnosed, and he started doing the experimental medicine that I talked about earlier in your show, he would have had to have been hospitalized in the United States to do it, and it would cost about $70,000 for 40 days. So I couldn't do that. It made no sense. I need the money for research, not for that. So I ended up moving to Italy and opened up a medical center about 20 miles from my grandfather's town. And in our town, which is called Altamura, every year in like March, end of March, beginning of April, the Rondoni, they arrive. And the Rondoni is the swift. So in English, that's what it would be, the swift. And so they arrive, they fly up to 140 miles an hour coming from Africa, and they lay their eggs and hatch their young in our town, Altamura. The interesting thing about a Rondoni is that it always has to land at least 15, 20 feet in the air because they have short bodies and very long wings. So if they land on the ground, they can't take off again because they try to flap the wings, but they hit the ground. So the people in my town, we all know what we need to do, and we've done it many times when my children were kids, that you find the bird that can't, you know, that is on, that's stranded on the ground before he gets eaten by a cat or run over by a car, and you cuff him in your hands, and you just throw him as high as you can, trying to get him a couple stories up if possible, so that he has all the time to begin flapping his wings and live. Well, that's exactly what happened to me. When I was 16 years old, and I was in front of Clarence Bryan, a wonderful man, a judge, and he said, you know, Patrick, you've been in front of me too many times. Bring me your enlistment papers next time. And I ended up having to go to the Air Force because they were the only one that had a delayed enlistment. And I was working, you know, in a hospital kitchen. I had Big Mama who protected me. I mean, it goes on and on.
It's a wonderful,
so many people.
It's a wonderful, wonderful book. It's called Flight of the Rondoni, High School Dropout versus Big Pharma, The Fight to Save My Son's Life. And it's by Patrick Girondi. Do you have a website you want people to go to?
Yeah, it's patgirondi.com.
Okay. Thank you so much for being on the show today, Pat. This is an amazing book. I'm going to really work hard to promote this book. And I'm glad that you mentioned St. Jude, because I always mention St. Jude and ask all of my listeners to send books for children to the hospital. So I think you're an amazing, amazing human being. I look forward to you coming back as soon as you either have another book coming out or perhaps to announce that they're picking this up for a streaming video.
Thank you very much, Bethy. I appreciate it very much. God bless you.
God bless you. You've done amazing work. Thank you very much. Bye-bye now.
Thanks.
Wow. Okay, I'm going to, let's play a book buzz. Okay.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes an L. Ron Hubbard's Writers of the Future semi-finalist released in 2021. Awakened by T.E. Bradford, available in print and ebook. Now, let's download the book buzz. In a bleak world where manufactured anodic commandos, or Macs, mercilessly hunt and kill humans, a wounded resistance fighter named Kara comes face to face with one of these machines. If her injury doesn't kill her, this Terminator will. But the Mac has a wound of his own and has short-circuited. Stuck on the wrong side of the wall, distant drones approach, sealing her death sentence. A wild idea convinces her to try and rewire the Mac. Maybe she's wrong, but she's dead either way. The gamble pays off, and he's activated again, carrying her out of danger to a safe location. But the rewiring did more than just a factory reset. He's behaving strangely, offering sympathy, doctoring her wound, and explaining things that shouldn't be possible about the war being fought over her now desolate homeland. Her hatred for these machines wavers in light of the unbelievable change. The journey back to her base through enemy territory won't be possible without him. With each passing hour, the test of whether he'll remain a friend or revert back to foe creates a delicate dance between human and machine. This high-tension, compact novella offers emotional punches right alongside the action, all while infusing themes of truth and spiritual meaning all the way to its climactic ending. Author T.E. Bradford is a writer, singer, songwriter, and cancer survivor. In her heart, she feels that her gift of writing is a little piece of magic, and that it is both her privilege and grandest adventure to find new ways to stretch a hand out to touch the wonder of this vast universe God created. This is Bria Burton with your futuristic fiction fix, signing off.
Okay. Wow. I'm so happy that we have the author on the program. I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper. Somebody that Bria Burton sent to me, she said, oh my goodness, you just have to talk to Tracy, and that's T.E. Bradford. So I'm so happy to welcome you to the program, Tracy.
Thank you so much, Patsy. I'm glad to be here.
So isn't that beautiful what Bria did for you?
It is absolutely amazing. I was in awe.
She's so fantastic. And she was so enthusiastic. When I got the email, she always, you know, emails me and she says, I have a writer for you. I have a really great writer. And she's always so enthusiastic. And I was, when I got it, and then, of course, I go and I get the book, and I do, you know, the novella. This was the novella, but also you have other books that are wonderful. And The Heart of, which one? The Heart of Ages?
The
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, your book covers are amazing. That's...
Oh, thank you.
Fantastic book covers.
Yes. Well, I'm happy to say Heart of the Hodges as well as Awakened. I actually designed those covers.
No.
Yes.
Wow.
My publisher has a designer, Dorinda Babcock, who worked with me on Awakened to make it, you know, make sure that we could see it in thumbnail size and make sure all the stuff was working right. But
it's brilliant.
Images and, yeah, especially for Heart of the Hodges. I get the credits for that. Yay!
Wow! And I have to tell people, I always tell people, you know, go to the author's website and, you know, they have a newsletter, whatever. But in your case, they have to go to the website because you have the best trailers ever. I mean, they are so... They're better than some global best-selling authors have trailers that do not match what you have.
Oh, thank you. Oh, I have to say, I have found the most wonderful person, and she just finished being a student with graphic arts a couple of years ago, so she's just getting her start. And I told her, when you get famous, please remember me, because I know how talented she is. So, yes, I appreciate those trailers as well.
it's rare that a trailer will come out so perfectly, you know, from somebody who's not, you know, already, you know, selling zillions of books. But we hope that you will be selling zillions of books.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That would be a dream come true.
And, of course, we're hoping always that one of them will be picked up or all of them will be picked up for some kind of a film or for...
it's funny. I actually do... through some friends of mine online, I also do a contest for screenwriting. So because I have some experience screenwriting, I have a screenplay version of Awakened that I'm hoping I can...
Oh, we're shopping that around. I hope that, you know, nowadays, the one nice thing about that will happen nowadays is that when they're interested and they take it, they actually take it. In the old days, they used to have this... I mean, they still option things, but generally speaking, today when something's optioned, it's actually going to get done.
Right.
In my day, I had spec scripts optioned. They weren't done, but if they re-optioned them, they had to pay me some more, you know, along the way. But my films all went into turnaround. But, oh, I would love to see Awakened. Wouldn't that be super? What a story. No, well, I think, you know, you're holding on for your this young lady who's doing your trailers to become famous. But I have a feeling perhaps you're going to be the one who's going to become famous.
We'll take each other.
That's right. Take each other along because, it's not only is it... It's smart, it's clever, and there is a reason why you've been, you're a finalist in the 2022 Realm Awards, huh?
Thank you, yes, and I'm so excited for that coming up in July, so.
Yeah, so you're going to the conference, which is July 21st to the 24th. Where is it going to be held?
It's in Atlantic City, New Jersey this year. It's in a different location. I think sometimes they'll do the same location a couple years in a row, but usually it's in a different location each year to give people in different parts of the country, you know, availability to get to it a little more easily. Last year we were in St. Louis, but this year we're in Atlantic City. So exciting.
Explain to my listeners who don't know, what is speculative fiction? Because it's, I know you describe yourself that way, and Bria does, and and you throw in a touch of something else. So explain exactly what category you're in.
Well, speculative generally is classified as like fantasy, sci-fi, or anything that is where you speculate on the nature of the universe. So I think, you know, for me, it's anything that doesn't fit into standard fantasy, sci-fi, but it does include fantasy sci-fi as well. So anything magical, anything dreamlike, anything set in other universes, all under the speculative umbrella.
And, of course, Awakened is the L. Ron Hubbard's Writers of the Future semifinalist, right?
Yes, that was such a huge honor. That is the only submission I've made to them that made semifinals. That is just like, it's a very large, very prestigious contest that like so many of us really try to break into. And so I was absolutely thrilled not only to get the semifinals in that, but I got to, when I went to Realm Makers Conference last year in St. Louis, I got to meet David Farland before he unfortunately passed away this last fall, which was so devastating to so many of us. But it was so wonderful to get to meet him and take his class and talk to him and just have some time with him. And it's just, it's a wonderful institution that they have for fantasy and sci-fi writers there as well.
Well, so tell us, well, let's talk a little bit about, since it's, you know, you're up for an award for it, tell us a little bit more about Awakened. Where did you get the idea? And
well, the idea actually, and it's funny that I'm up for the Realm Award, because Realm Makers Consortium is like an online group where Christian speculative authors get together and we support each other and we talk and we kind of, you know, enjoy each other. And it was a conversation on that group that spawned this idea. And somebody had asked a question about how they could make these two characters relate. And as I was going through and writing my thoughts out to them, I realized that I was getting very in-depth. And I'm like, okay, this is too in-depth to give somebody else's an answer because you're writing their book for them. But also, the idea was just, it reached out and grabbed me. And what it really was the idea of exploring that relationship between creator and created. And how did I make an analogy to that relationship? And so the way that I did that was through this girl, Kara, and an automated Mac. He's a manufactured Anoda commando. And he's, you know, basically been damaged, like the book Buzz clip talks about. And when Kara's able to re-engage him, something happens more than just him turning back on. He is basically awakened and becomes sentient to some extent. And along the way, he questions his relationship with her, and he also forces her to question her relationship with her creator.
Well, you know, we've been having a lot of I think yesterday there was a big article about computers being racist. And a few weeks ago there was about, I don't know, one of the high-tech firms where their robot is like the age 7 or something mentally. So I think this book came out just at the right, you know, this whole story comes out at the right time. I hope you get great publicity for it. And let's say, wait, oh, We have to send a message. Wake up, Hollywood! Get awakened! I'm going to put that on my website today. I'm going to put, wake up, Hollywood! That's right.
Thank you so much.
Isn't that right? I mean, they really should, because it would be fun. It would be
Be. Oh, really, there's so many visual things that would be wonderful, like on a movie scenario with this, that I think it carries that kind of element with it that it would make a good action film.
Wow. You know, I have a feeling, I get a feeling about things like this. So, yeah, you know, I remember when I first talked to JoJo Moyes and I said, you know, I think your book is going to be a movie. So you never know, but I really have a good feeling about this.
Well, thank you, Patsy. And I'll tell you a secret since I'm on the radio with you. I have a sequel in the works.
Good. That's what, because that's what you need, because once they take one thing, then they want right away. They want the next one immediately.
Yes. Yep.
Well, that's exciting. That's exciting. So I know that, as I said, Bria was just, she's just sort of blown away by your work.
Oh, thank you.
And it's always, I love when writers help other writers, and that's what we're trying to do here. And Bria has been doing these book buzzes for, you know, for this speculative fiction, because we want people to find new ideas and new things to write about. Now, when you mentioned that it's Christian oriented, how does that make it different? And sometimes people might say, well, how can you have science fiction because we have everything laid out already?
That opens such a can of worms.
Yeah, I don't want to do that, huh?
But well, no, actually, this is where I live and breathe, to be honest with you. For me, science doesn't conflict with God. Science proves God. That there's an order to a universe that sort of naturally lends itself to chaos, to me, is absolutely a grand design. And the more I dive into it, the more that I look at it, the more I learn about it, the more beautiful it gets for me. So that's the inspiration for everything that I do, for everything that I write. And, you know, I know you mentioned writers helping other writers. The joy of being a Christian author, and it's just so prevalent with Realm Makers and with my publishing house, Elk Lake, that it's a family. And it's, you know, in some situations when you're a writer, especially early on and you're trying to break in, other writers don't necessarily want to be helpful unless you find a really special group, which I've been very fortunate to find in many instances. But, you know, they might not want to do an endorsement unless you're at a certain level, or they might not want to share a secret with you if they found out secrets about marketing. But when you're in a Christian writers group, not only are your goals the same, but everybody is there to uplift each other and to really support each other and encourage each other. And it's just such an amazing feeling. And like with my publishing house, Elk Lake, like I mentioned, we're like a family, and it's absolutely amazing. My the senior editor, the owner of Elk Lake, Deb Haggerty, she's like my biggest fan. She encourages me so much. It's absolutely incredible. And I am so blessed to be part of that and to be part of that particular God. It's definitely a God thing. God led me to them, led me to Realm Makers, led me in every place that I've gone so far, and it's thrilling and it's a blessing. And the reason I think that I write Christian speculative fiction versus just regular speculative fiction is because all those things that I mentioned blow me away so much. It's like a constant daily epiphany that you find something new that is just so amazing and so beautiful in the midst of what can otherwise be sometimes depressing and sad. So...
Well, you write beautifully. Have you been writing since you were a little girl?
I have been, yes. My mother will tell you there's a picture of me when I'm very little, like, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 years old, and I'm reading to my 5 and 6 year old cousins. And she loves that. She loves that picture. And I also started with music very early on. She used to say I took one of those little baby toy pianos that had like 9 keys on it, and I plucked out harmony. And so when I was 12 years old, I wrote my first story and I wrote my first song.
Wow. And you're multi-talented. What the heck? Here you're going to write. You're going to write the, you're going to write the movie. You're going to write the music for the movie. Well, you're a one-woman show here.
A one-woman band. No. These movies have been tied together for me, honestly. And you'll find, too, in my books, like in my young adult fantasy series, there's a lot of music in there. I have songs that I've actually written for the books. For Awakened, I have there's a national anthem for one of the nations. So yeah, I definitely weave music into all of them.
Well, it's wonderful, and I do want people to go to your website. They can find out more about you. And as I said, people, really, you must check out these trailers. You will be so jealous. I mean, writers will be so jealous. They'll say, "My gosh, how did she do this?"
Yes.
You know, so it is really, really fantastic and something that's quite unusual. I love this girl, whoever she is. She's a wonderful, wonderful designer. And of course, I'm sure your input, because you have this vision. And you see the characters in your head, I think, right?
Yeah, I definitely do. I see them like a movie in my head, for sure.
And when you're writing, do you get lost in your writing, that you feel like you're right in there?
If I'm fortunate, yes.
Well, I'm really so thrilled that you were on the program today and so happy. You know, with the book buzzes, what we do is we play them all the time. I mean, we will play it again in August and probably in September. And we play them over and over because we don't want people to forget a book that we love.
Wonderful.
So we might play it 3 years from now if we're still here. So
that's amazing.
So that's something that I don't think any other radio program has ever done.
But definitely.
That's the goal here, to make sure that people find good books. And even if they've been, you know, written years ago, we still want to promote them. Okay.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I'm just so happy. So just give people your website and Facebook and all that stuff.
Yes, they can go to www.tebradford.com. That's TEBRADFORD.com. And on Facebook, they can find me at facebook.com/TEBradfordAuthor.
Okay, good. And they can follow you, and they can go to your website, see these
Absolutely.
Beautiful, beautiful trailers. And I'm sure your Facebook page is fun too. And then will you come back on if you get a movie deal, will you come back on to announce it?
Absolutely.
I would really like some breaking news here, so we could do that right here online. So how about that?
I will keep you posted, and definitely we'll come back anytime.
Okay, great talking to you. Bye now.
Thank you so much, Patsy.
Okay, bye now. All right. Oh, isn't she sweet? I tell you, people, what trailers. You have to go and see her website. Unbelievable. It's like it's a Hollywood production trailers. The kind of thing that, oh, wow. Yes, I love it. And I just want to talk. We have time for EHS. Let's do our EHS ad, because people really, you need solar energy. I'm telling you, this is going crazy.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Wow. You know, I was talking to my cousin in California, and he paid $34. $34 for his electric bill. I'm not going to say how much mine was, but you could almost add a zero to it, and it's crazy. The electric bills are crazy. So I suppose anybody, if you can find a way to save money on electricity, and my goodness, it's awful. The prices, I don't even want to go there. The prices are so terrible of everything, and certainly what we're paying for electricity. And then we've had here in Florida, we've also had these really, this summer, we have a lot of hot days. We're really, really hot. And our bills are going up, too. So anyway, EHS, go EHS. It's a wonderful company. It's a company that they do all the work. They don't subcontract it out. So you can trust them when they do an evaluation. They come to your house, and then they do the work. It's all done just in a top-class professional way. So goehs.com. That's a site for you if you're interested in saving. You know, get that audit. They do an audit. They come in and they measure everything. They have all their equipment. They measure where you're losing, you know, where you're being wasted, your electricity is being wasted. And they're wonderful. So definitely go EHS and contact them. And, well, you know, I also want to say that I am so happy with the emails I've been getting. Bill Larson's not coming in. He was supposed to come in next week, but we're going to wait a couple of weeks. He's going to do an event. But I have been getting in some very interesting emails in, and particularly about the talk we had last time about trademarks. So if you have any questions about trademarks, about intellectual property, or about how to protect your rights after you've gone, and all of that kind of stuff, you can just send it me an email. It's at patsy.radio. That's Patsy with a Z. You should all know that by now. patzi.radio@gmail.com, and I will give Bill Larson your questions, because he wants to protect your intellectual properties. Because I wish I had had him years ago. If I had had him years ago, oh boy, life would have been different. Anyway, I just want to tell everyone to remember what I always tell everyone, that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry and her Witch City Mysteries, and now her Haven. Oh, I don't know. She's got this new series set right here in Florida, and I just love it. And so we have lots of things to do with Carol J. Perry, and I'm also hoping that I'm going to hear some good news about T.E. Bradford, because I think she is a winner here. She's a real winner. And, of course, Flight of the Rondone, Flight of the Rondone by Patrick Girondi is a fantastic book. Anyway, everybody, have a great day. I'm done. I'm tired today. I needed some coffee. Well, somebody, coffee company, sponsor me. Send me coffee. Bye-bye now. Oh, and I have to... See, I even forgot to salute him. Big Ed, you have to salute me. Keep me awake here. Okay, he saluted me, and I can say bye now.